The following message was recorded at the 2012 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the No Regrets Conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you're all here. And, you know, I'm actually a little surprised. If there was a seminar titled Healing the Wounds of Your Past, I probably wouldn't go to it. And I'm surprised that I'm actually here because for most of my adult life and most of my ministry, it seemed kind of like a downer to talk about my past. And I don't know if you're that way. I suppose you're here. So there must be something that draws you to this topic. So hopefully we'll be able to explore something together and you'll see that, and something I've come to believe, that this is a very, very significant part of our spiritual journey, understanding where we've come from and what's affected us and how it's still showing up in our lives. Well, where I want to begin is, first of all, by saying this is like time travel for me. Back in 1976, here at Elmbrook, I actually worked at this church for 2 years. Right out of college, this was the place I got my first real job out of college, and it was the first place that I ever had a ministry. It was also the place, and I just have to do a shout out here to Stuart and other staff members, it was the first place that I really saw a church and church leaders working well. I have such respect, and over the years continue to have such respect for the leadership of this church, and in particular for Stuart Briscoe. He was actually very formative in a very important part of my life because right around Christmas time, he got a phone call from a frantic young college student in the ministry here who had just broken up with her fiancé. And Stuart, being the gracious man he did, he kind of talked her down from that and helped her kind of put herself back together again. Well, that woman went on to be my wife. I met and I married my wife right over in the chapel here. And Stuart performed the ceremony. So this place has some really powerful connections for me, and I'm delighted to be here. The other highlight of being here was I worked with, for 1 year or about a year and a half, I worked with high school students, and then for about another half year to three quarters of a year, I worked with the college and career ministry. While I was working with the high school ministry, there was a really, almost like a revival that took place at Brookfield Central High School. And on Wednesday nights, we gathered, and there was just this wonderful surge of interest in spiritual things among the high school students, led by one new believer in particular, a young man senior who was there in the study. And I could see, just in the few months that I was involved in this study, that something very special was going on, and especially going on in this young man's life. That young man, that senior in high school, was Steve Sonderman. And it's really cool for me to come back and see the effect that that guy has had over the years. We're all here. Our lives have all been touched by that young man. So, again, very, very powerful memories that I have of this place. And glad to be here, glad to be among you all. Well, when men get together, one of the things we sometimes like to do is tell scar stories. You know what I mean by scar stories? You got any scars on your body anywhere? And sometimes we compare. You know the movie Jaws? Remember when they're on the boat and they all start, you know, pulling up their sleeves and pulling up his pants to show all the different scars that they have on them? So what I want you to do is just take a second here, turn to the guy next to you, or if you're in a row, you know, maybe in groups of threes if you can, and tell one of your favorite scar stories. Now, one of two things is going to happen. Either you're going to tell a scar story and it's going to make you really look good, or you're going to tell a scar story and it's going to be really embarrassing. Both count. So do that now. Just take a couple minutes together and share a scar story.
Thank you.
All right, 30 more seconds. 30 more seconds. Switch if you haven't. All right, I'd love to hear who of you has a really good hero scar story. One of you maybe heard someone. Yeah, right here in the middle here. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was playing football,
and
I was going back on one return, and I put my stomach
and my foot in the roof. Oh, now to me, what's the hero in that? That was for a dumb game of football. But, yeah. Well, you know what they say, you know, the body will heal, the score remains the same. Another one in the back there. Oh, okay, now that's heroic, all right? Guy steps, puts his foot out there to take the hit, all right? Maybe one other one here, yeah. Bingo.
He said, I told you. And then, the more that is, it is better to walk in obedience than it is.
I don't know. Actually, if you said you got the scar going the way he told you to go, or the way you didn't?
He said, go this way towards you.
Yeah.
So if you slip, he's going
to. Okay. All right. Well, my rule is always lefty-loosey, righty-tighty, so you doing the wrong thing there? All right, who's got a dumb one? Who's willing to be embarrassed in front of us all to share a story, all right?
We're working construction. We were putting in these little T-posts in the ground for a fence. And on top of that, we've got a sledgehammer. It's calm in the ground while it's cool and steady. I want to see if those little stays on top of the post.
Sledgehammer right on your hand. But for a worthy cause, for a worthy cause. You've already shared. Somebody else.
Oh, I got one.
Jeff, you got one, okay?
I got one. I'm on a porch, and I'm cutting the old decking off the porch. All right? I'm running a saw down, so there's small pieces. You guys ever remember the cartoons where the guy's on the end of the branch, and he's sawing the branch up, he's on the wrong side?
Yeah.
I'm right on top of the boards as I saw it. Whoom! Right through the deck.
Goes down. That counts. Where's the scar? Oh, all right. Great. Well, I got some scars, okay? When I look at my body, I look in the mirror, and I've got a scar right here in my nose. When I was 3 years old, I walked into a table. Now, how do you walk into a table and not see it? But at 3 years old, I was able to crash it right in there. I got a scar under my eye here. Dog bit me. I was petting the dog too much, got my face in the dog. My mother said over and over again, don't put your face in the dog's face. And sure enough, I did, and dog bit me right there. I got one right here on my thumb. I used to like to light plastic on fire, and I lit this fly swatter on fire. And I don't know if you know, sometimes when you light plastic, it drips with a flaming thing, and some of you guys are making the sound of it. That's so cool. I'm not the only one. So anyway, zip, 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 and a big ball of flaming plastic landed right there in my thumb, and it just sat there burning, and I couldn't get it off. So I've got a scar there. But there's other scars, men, and they're the scars I want to talk about today. They're the scars that we don't see. They're the scars that are in here, in our soul, in our heart. And just like our scars here have some stories attached to them, some of them are fun to tell, some of them painful to tell. The truth about what's going on inside of us is we got scars inside, and there's stories. And those stories are affecting us. Now, in the movie Jaws, you remember that one of the guys, he opens up his shirt and he points to his chest. And they're all looking at him like, we don't see the scar. He goes, right here. Mary Ellen Moffat, she broke my heart. And they all laugh. And it is funny. And some scars are like that. You get over it. Over time, you're sad, you move on. Some scars, we just heal from. We get past it. Other scars, other wounds come back. We think we're over them, and maybe for a season we are, but they return from time to time, and they remind us of the pain, and they carry a message, and we hear that message or feel that message again. Some scars are there because of what someone did to us. Some of our wounds are the result of someone else's actions. Truthfully, some of our wounds are the result of our own actions. Isn't that true of your physical scars? Some happened to you and some you did. And some scars and some wounds, and the ones that I especially want to tune in today, they can actually define us. They can seem to be our identity, or they have profoundly shaped our identity. Psalm 109, verse 22, David says, I am poor and needy, and my heart is wounded within me. David, a man after God's own heart, could express the fact that in his heart he felt wounds. Some he knew he had done, and some were done to him. But he took his wounded heart to God and opened up about him. And I believe that one of the reasons that wounds are so significant is not only do they hurt and we remember them, but I believe and have come to discover that wounds have messages attached to them. And we don't just repeat the message. We don't just look at the scar. We don't just have the message happen once. We repeat the message. It comes back to us, just like we just told these stories about our scars. And these messages are about who we are. And that's why they're so debilitating, because we've come to define ourselves or redefine ourselves based on a wound that happened. Now, what are we supposed to do with these? What are we supposed to do with our wounds? How are we supposed to think about them? And realistically in life, what can we expect from God? What help does he offer? Well, in this message this morning, I've got sort of good news and bad news, and I'm going to get the bad news first, so please don't leave until the end of the talk. This is motivation to stay, because things are going to get darker and downer before they get lighter and better. When you think about your emotional and heart wounds, think about, for example, the physical comparison, the scars that we were just all talking about. And as believers in Jesus, what are we promised about our bodies? You think about this for a minute. Are we promised complete, utter, total healing in this life? No. Are we promised it eventually? Yes, yes. There will be a resurrection. And we will be completely healed someday, but it's not now. Now, from time to time, we see in Jesus' ministry that he did heal people. From time to time, maybe some of you have prayed, and God has miraculously helped to bring a healing. Periodically, God does that. But that's not a promise here for our life right now. Physically, also, if you think about it, being a Christ follower has residual benefits. I'm actually a healthier man because I've followed Jesus for the last 40 or so years. Why? Well, because for one thing, I'm not out getting drunk every Friday night. That's just not my lifestyle. And I have hope. And so as bad as things get, I generally turn to have a positive outlook. And that helps my physical well-being. Overall, I'm just probably a better, healthier person than a lot of my peers who were of the same background, eat the same food, basically, but don't have Christ. So there's this little residual thing that helps. But it's not a guarantee that I'm going to be healthy my whole life and I'm going to die. That's going to happen. And you know, it's interesting. If you think about it, when Jesus was resurrected and he had his resurrected body, he still had his scars, we're told. So, you know, Thomas wanted to put his fingers in the nail prints. And even in Jesus' resurrected body, the scars remained. Well, that makes sense if you think about it for just a minute, because those scars are our redemption. And I believe that God the Father wanted to preserve in the body of Jesus for all eternity the image, the reminder of what price was paid for our redemption. So those scars there make sense. Now, did Jesus ever complain? Well, you know, I really want the whole body back. I don't want the scars. I think he knew, no, that these scars are important. Maybe physically, this is speculation, maybe we're going to have some of our scars in the resurrection. Not because God's being cruel to us, but because they tell a story that needs to be told forever. Now, think about your soul wounds and do the comparison. The Bible promises, Revelation 21:4, which is actually quoting an Isaiah passage, that someday God will wipe away every tear. The day is coming when all of our soul wounds, all of our emotional wounds are going to be taken care of and the tears will be gone. But not now. Not now. Psalm 58:6 says God keeps a record of our tears. One translation actually says he puts them in a bottle. They're preserved, but they're not done away with. They're still coming. So tears are part of this life. It's true that we probably get some residual emotional benefit from being Christ followers. We probably have better quality of friends. We probably have a more positive outlook. But there's no guarantee that I see in Scripture that our emotional wounds and that those experiences, maybe from long ago, still might not dog us somewhat in life. And wounds have changed our personality. Does heaven undo all that? Does our new life there take away all of the actual benefits that have come to us, even though they came through very painful experiences? I don't think so. I don't think so. Well, I'm not here today to give you, you know, some 6 steps to freedom or make glib promises about the wounds of your life. But I am here to invite you on a journey. A journey that begins, perhaps somewhat easily, with just simple curiosity. To be curious about your wounds and your story and how they might be showing up in some invisible ways in your life and you've never made the connection yet. Then to go the next step, which is to be honest and vulnerable. To bring what you discover out into the open, to bring it open into the open with yourself, certainly to bring it into the open with God. And then the really difficult task, I believe, is to bring our wounds into community with other men. You know, C.S. Lewis once said, we must bring to God what is in us, not what we wish was in us. And so when we discover some of the stuff in there, we need to bring that out of the open and bring that to God. Come as we are. And the final step, or the final move here, is the move of courage. Because we have to, at times in life, go into dark places and be willing to do some work on these wounds. To be committed, then, to also helping other men, to building communities, bands of brothers who help each other take this same journey and do the healing work. Now, why? What is the point of doing that? Why am I inviting you into this kind of a journey? What are you going to get out of it? Well, I think there's some really compelling reasons to do this work. And first of all, I believe that your wounds will actually explain some of the most mysterious things about you. Think, for example, of like the dumbest thing you've done as an adult. And I'm sort of smiling, but you know, think of maybe like a place of real shame, where you just shake your head when you think, how did I do that? Why did I do that? What was going on for me? I actually believe, and I'm going to try to establish that as we talk some more, that those choices, whatever motivated you there, the biggest mistakes in your life as an adult probably, not always, but probably are connected to some wound that you were trying to resolve way back when. And you were trying to address it in a very twisted and unhelpful way, but you were. And you know, if you go back far enough in your life, I believe the worst memories that you think of as a child, the places that hurt the most, those wounds, you might think they're way back there, but they're showing up in your life. They're popping out sideways. So your wounds can help explain some of your life's mysteries, and they can also help you avoid the same mistakes. The second thing that's very significant about our woundedness is they affect who we marry and how we show up in our marriages. There's one author that put it this way. He goes, romantic love is a form of temporary insanity which guarantees the propagation of the species. And that temporary insanity is often energized by some wound or some experience, and we hope that our marriage will resolve that problem. At one point, my wife and I were doing some marriage counseling together, and the counselor looked at me and said, I don't know if you ever thought about this, but I believe every marriage is an unconscious attempt by two people to finish the unfinished business of childhood. And I looked at her and I said, well, wait a minute. No, I mean, I'm a Christian. I mean, I'm a pastor. I mean, God led me to this woman and led her to me, and I could cite all the reasons that God was in it. And she wasn't saying anything about that. It was God. And it was also the fact that we saw in each other something that we, at the time, we couldn't have put words to this. We didn't know that this was what was going on. But we really were trying to finish the unfinished business of childhood. And how we show up in our marriage is often very childish. I don't know if you've noticed that. I have in my life. And I believe that marriage is actually a tool by God, given to us by God, to help make you into the complete person He wants you to be. Not because your wife completes you or you complete her, but because all of her junk and all of your junk will force you both to do the work of completing yourself. You see, your wife's wounds and your wounds, they combine to make a perfect sauce for you to marinate in for a lifetime. And you will become a tender, juicy, flavorful man in that sauce. Now, those of you who are single, you are not going to figure this out before you get married. So I'm just here to tell you, as much as you think you're going to figure this out and know this and be alert to this, ain't going to happen. That temporary insanity going to come over you, all right? But once you've made the choice, I believe it's going to help you to understand the woundedness that you bring, the woundedness that your wife brings, and to be aware of that and realize what dance is going on there. And instead of stepping on each other's toes, learn how to get it in sync. You know, just this week, my wife and I work with couples, and one of the things that, we were with a distressed couple, and the wife was saying, and she was saying this in tears, she goes, I am so afraid that I tricked him into marrying me, that he married the wrong woman, and now all the problems I'm going through are going to keep him back from being the man he's supposed to be. And I looked at her and said, look, we all married the wrong person. It is the process of becoming the right person that all that character growth, that's the point. And as far as keeping him back, I actually believe that his learning to love you as you are is exactly the school he needs to be in to be able to have a more effective ministry at a later point in time. You are exactly who he's supposed to be with. And not because you are this wonderful pastor's wife, but your problems and his coming together are helping both of you be exactly who you're supposed to be. A third reason for looking into this area of our lives is that I believe your wounds are the catalyst for your life's mission. Now, there's two versions of how it catalyzes your mission. One is very toxic and very dangerous and to be avoided. The other is quite positive and quite helpful. So first, let me talk about this toxic version. Because of our woundedness, many of us are in our adult life trying to prove something. You know, that wounded message has given us a version of ourselves that we don't like. And so we spend our adult life trying to live that message down. Why is it that Michael Jordan, after having an amazing basketball career, decides to go play baseball? What the heck was that about? Well, he pretty much admitted it. It's because his dad always wanted him to be a baseball player. So here he is, obviously good at basketball, an amazing player, but he decides to go and sort of prove to dad that maybe he can do this. Now, he never amounted to anything at baseball, but there's this message in him that said he had to prove that to dad. Well, that's the toxic side. That's not a good mission to go on. to prove your dad wrong or to get his approval. I see this in ministry a lot, where you'll find someone in leadership, sometimes senior pastors, but sometimes leaders, lay leaders in the church, and they never got the message that they were good enough. And so you'll see people in ministry, in front of people, looking for that approval they never got in the faces of the people that they're trying to minister to. That's a temptation for me right now. You all are sitting there very still listening to me. That's seductive. You know, we've set this up so that you're all, you know, nobody listens to me. I was the fourth child in a family, a noisy family. I never got listened to. And truthfully, some of my woundedness shows up because I get to sit, when I teach, I get to stand in front of people and they shut up and listen for at least a half hour or so. Well, so, I know that about myself. I've got that right out in front of me. I realize that. But many a person has lived their whole life oblivious to that, using other people to try to heal the wounds that they won't heal with direct effort. And you all have maybe been in situations where you felt used by someone doing that, or maybe you've been the user. I find it interesting that when you think about when God the Father declared that he was delighted in Jesus, at what point in Jesus' life did that happen? Did that happen before Jesus' public ministry, or once he'd accomplished everything and finished his ministry? When did that happen? You know the story of Jesus' life. At his baptism, the voice from heaven declares, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I'm well pleased." That blessing came to him before he had done anything. And this is very important because many a father wound, and we many of these wounds do come from our dads or moms or some authority figure, the lack of that blessing before we've accomplished anything has caused many people to go in very destructive directions. We as fathers must not withhold these blessings from our sons and daughters. First comes love and delight and acceptance. Then comes great accomplishment. Love motivates performance. It does not reward it. And those of us who've experienced love as a reward, not as the precondition, if we think we have to do something to be lovable, we'll go in this toxic direction with our mission. We will live out of our woundedness, and we might be outwardly successful, but inside we will be hollow. You see, a blessing from a father comes to a young man, and the young man lives into that blessing. He doesn't get the blessing as a reward for what he's done. Blessings are first and foremost a declaration of the state of the person. They may have a predictive value. You will do this. But the reason its predictive value exists is because it's been stated unequivocally, this is the kind of person you are, and I bless it. I see it. And we all, man, we need these blessings. We needed them from our dads. Most of us didn't get them. We can give them to each other. We can get them later in life. That's the good news. We can get them from each other. We can get them from God. But we must have them. And we must have them before we've performed so that we can live our lives into that blessing and not trying to get it. So the toxic side is where that's absent, where our wound, we're trying to do something to fix our wound in a very sideways and shadowy and obvious way. But there's a golden side to this. I actually believe that what you are destined for, where you will make your greatest contribution in life, is going to be tied to something you learned from a deep wound. 2 Corinthians says that we comfort others with the comfort with which we've been comforted. So we receive something in this journey, and that's the thing we bring to the world. The comfort we received is what we give to others. The healing that we get around our particular woundedness and our story is what sensitizes us, enables us to reach out into the world and lives of others. And that's as it should be. We are all trying to build a certain kind of world. And I believe, the more I live, I see it in my life, that the world I'm trying to create is actually a world that a very little boy that lives inside of me dreamed and hoped might be possible. And that, the energy of that dream is limitless. It is absolutely endless. I don't have to try to work myself up into trying to create that in the world. But it comes from a very little part, a little boyish part of me, and a part that where life didn't work well. And I dreamed of this world because I didn't have it. It wasn't in existence. You have that too. You experienced a world that as it should not be. And your best contribution will be some version of bringing that world to the larger scale world, based on the ideal that you had, probably had, at a very young age. I just heard a very powerful example of this and how this has played out in a very public man's life. Wes Stafford, if you know who he is, he's the president of Compassion International. And I wasn't familiar with his story, but he just spoke at our church a few weeks ago. And I was amazed at how much his life just illustrates this. His ministry right now, worldwide ministry, is about helping children. Helping children in poverty, helping children who have been abused, helping children that are being sex trafficked, all that. Where did his passion for children come from? Well, he told a very vulnerable story about how he grew up on the mission field and was shipped off to the missionary boarding school, and how he encountered in the boarding school what he called, and this is his description, the people who were teaching him were their rejects. They'd wanted and aspired to go into ministry and mission work, but they'd not been accepted or they'd not been allowed to do so. And so the mission agencies would put him in and have him lead these schools for the missionary kids. And he said, I encountered bitter, angry, hostile people. And they took out their anger on us kids. And we were sexually, emotionally, and physically abused in horrible, horrible ways. And then we were told that we couldn't tell God, we couldn't tell anybody because our parents were doing God's work and people would go to hell if our parents weren't free to continue doing their work. Horrible, horrible manipulation of these kids. And he lived through that. And he can't tell this story even now without tears. But look at the power of this man. This man in his brokenness, in his horrible woundedness, is now has a life mission to help kids, and he's doing a fantastic job. And he's not doing it sideways. He's being very open about why it is he's so passionate about kids because of his own woundedness. Now, not all of us are wounded in spectacular ways like that, and I use spectacular in quotes. Some of our wounds don't seem that dramatic. But I do believe if you go on this exploration, you will find some real gold, if you will, down in there around your woundedness, and it will be the magnet to pull you into a very fruitful life and fruitful ministry. Now, I'll tell you a little bit about mine. I go back to the passage in 1 Timothy 4:16 where Paul says to Timothy, pay attention to yourself and to your doctrine. Pay attention to yourself and to your doctrine. And I often think about myself as that my life in ministry has been about the two truths of that passage. The capital T truth, which is doctrine, the internal changing, unchanging and eternal truths of God and his word. And then the small T truth, the truth about us as human beings. And the importance of knowing both of those truths really well. That's really what my life's been about. The capital T truth is all the theology I studied, all the things I wanted to learn, because I grew up in a church and in a home that was somewhat skeptical about spiritual things. I was actually grew up and I got a lot of mixed messages about the Bible. On one hand, it's a really good book. On the other hand, it's a bunch of stories full of myths, contradictions. And I didn't get a clear picture of the Bible. And so when I became a Christian at the age of 16 and began exploring it for myself, I was amazed at the power of this. And I thought, why was this so taunted and denigrated? Why were there people that made fun of this? This is one. This book is amazing, and Jesus is amazing. I don't get it. So I have kind of a wound, if you will, around how I felt duped. That God and His truth are rich and amazing. And I've spent a lifetime studying it. But the other piece of truth, the small t truth, has also come into focus for me. It's the truth about myself. And I used to think that ministry was about taking the capital T truth and impressing it on people so their lives conform to that capital T truth, changed, and that's the purpose of ministry. Take the capital T truth, impress it on people's lives, their lives conform to the capital T truth, and the kingdom of God comes about. What I missed in that formula was Paul was saying to Timothy, you have to also pay attention to yourself. You have to know yourself. You have to be a student of yourself. And in ministry, you have to be a student of other people. And so the idea is to take the capital T truth and wed it to the shape and realities of the small t truth of individuals so that they fit together. And if you don't know the truth about yourself, if you just are oblivious to your inner world, then the capital T truths of God's words won't have anything to connect to. They'll just slide off. What first woke me up to this was early in my marriage. As my wife began to go on a journey of healing, all the tools that I had used in ministry weren't working on her. She had been sexually abused as a child and went into a very deep depression. And as I tried to cheer her up, as I tried to tell her the truth about God and His love for her and all that, it didn't sink in. And I didn't understand why, with all the knowledge I'd accumulated, I couldn't get her to see the truth. And what I realized is that she hadn't gone on this journey. She hadn't really understood how extensive and how deep these wounds were for her. You know, I'd always been about being right. And Dallas Willard says something interesting about being right. He says, it's really hard to really want to be right all the time and not hurt somebody with it. And I think I did a lot of hurting. I hurt my wife. Because I was right, and she needed to be right. But then as I watched her take this journey of uncovering all the impact that this had on her life, and friends, it got worse before it got better. But as she went through that, I saw a deepening of her faith, and I saw that she began to take the face of her abusers off God, which is where she put them, and see the God who's really there, not the mean God that she put in her mind. And I, too, after watching her journey, said, I need to go on a similar journey. Now, I was not sexually abused. I was not physically abused. I don't have that kind of a story. But there were ways in which even my dad, as good a man as he was, sent a message to me about me. And his message was, you don't matter. He was busy all the time. He was a good man, but he was just busy and unavailable to me. And so I took on the message, I guess I got to figure this out on my own. Dad's not there to really guide me and show me much. He's a nice guy. He doesn't hurt me, but he's not there. And I saw the power of this, and it snuck up on me in a way I didn't expect. So I have a 27-year-old son, and the day that he was born, there was this flurry of activity, and that day was actually at night. And when it's all over, he came quickly, and there he is. He's finally laying there sleeping. My wife is laying there sleeping. I'm in the room. It's quiet and settled, and I'm just smiling. I'd had a daughter 2.5 years before, so now I'm having my first son and my only son. And I sit there, and I look at him, and then I just start crying. I was like, what is that about? And I realized the message in my head was, oh, my gosh, I have a son. I don't know how to take him into manhood. My daughter, it's like, well, you know, it's like I don't have to be anything but a dad for him, but I got to be a man to show him the way, and I don't know the way. I mean, I grew up, I'm a man biologically, but I felt this ache that I didn't know the way. Nobody showed me the way, and now I had to show him. And I kind of tucked that away. I didn't know quite what to do with that, but I put that away. And I've come back to that. And it's actually energizing a whole lot of my life these days. Well, here's what I want to summarize. First, that our wounds explain a lot of life's mysteries. and it's really worthwhile to explore. Second, our wounds will affect our marriage. Very important to, if you want a good marriage, to understand the woundedness you bring and the wife and your wife brings. And your wounds will direct your mission, toxically or in a healthy way. So if you want to go after your deepest pain to heal it, your dumbest choice to explain it and keep from repeating it, what drew you to your wife to understand and better your marriage and find the direction of your life, how it's destined to go, you will have to pay attention to your wounds and be on a journey to work through them. It is a journey that starts here, but it is not over until heaven. Now, I want to offer you some practical help, some steps as we close here, to just talk about how you do this work. And I need a brave volunteer. Is there a brave volunteer that can is willing to talk about an area? I'm going to interview you, but I'm going to interview about some place in your life where you feel blocked. So is there someone that would be willing? Would you? All right, so come on up here. Thank you for being courageous to demonstrate this. And I want to show you one way that this can work. Yeah. Okay. So we're going to...
Right, my legs are asleep.
Your legs asleep. All right. So here's what this looks like. So Sean, let's just graphically present, like, I'm going to use this line here. That's you where life is right now. Okay? And somewhere out here is something that you want, that you don't have yet. Describe this out here. What's the character or the growth or the change that you want that's over here?
To let go of anger, bitterness, hatred, and resentment.
Okay, so you'd like to get rid of anger, bitterness, hatred, is a good thing to let go. Wouldn't you agree? Okay, now, who here would be willing to actually become a role player of his anger, bitterness, and who's got some anger or something like that? You do. All right. Awesome.
I can do that.
All right, so what you're going to do, Jeff, is you're going to be right here, which is the barrier.
All right.
Because you're what he's got to get through to get over here.
Okay.
Okay? Now, we're not going to physically do it, but what is the message that your anger, that comes to you from the anger and bitterness and resentment? What if you were going to give him a voice saying something to you, what would it be? Yeah, you're not good enough. Yeah, no. So what we're going to do, let me listen carefully. We're going to use his words exactly.
Okay.
One of the things we want to do is capture, like, his inner world the way it actually is. So we're going to quote him verbatim, which was, you're not good enough.
You're not
You'll never be good enough.
Okay. You're not good enough. You'll never be good enough.
Right.
You're not good enough. You'll never be good enough.
Right. So that's what you hear, and that's getting in the way of you being here, right? Okay, so now what I want you to do, I want you to pick someone to be you standing there. Any volunteer? All you have to do is stand there. This one's easy. Anybody willing to do that? Yep, got to finish this up here. All right, thank you. So you're going to stand there. Now what I want you to do is I want you to go stand in the aisle there so you can watch this. So you're now outside of this. It's like you're looking at your inner life. Here's what you want. Here's where you are. And here's this message. So I want you to watch this a second.
All right, so you're not good enough. What's the other one?
You'll never
be good enough. You're not good enough. You'll never be good enough.
Right. And what is his response to this negative message? Does he have a response to this when he hears this? It was you? Yeah.
Get angry or stuff it.
You want to get angry or stuff it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what does he want underneath that? What does he really want? How would you describe his want to be over here?
To get past that, not pay attention to that.
And so put that want in a statement.
I want to be able to get over.
Yeah.
Or not listen to those messages.
I want to not listen. I want to get past that. Okay. Now here's the kicker question. Who is this? Where have you seen an actual person like this somewhere in your life before? So your former spouse had that message. Now, let me dial it back even further. Teenage years, grade school years, maybe even earlier. Who else had this voice?
Parents.
Yeah. Guys, do you see this? Thank you. Thank you very much for being open. Do you notice that his life right now, he can identify the block, and parents and an ex-wife are still in it. This is why this is so important, men. This is why we need to do this work. Now, I'm going to do one final thing here. I know we got to end. I'm just going to give you an advertisement. www, write this down, dot thecrucibleproject.org. We're doing work. I'm all about these days doing work to help men find these blocks and give you practical tools. And if you come on one of our retreats, you will get tools to help you get through it. www.thecrucibleproject.org. So God bless you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. Gentlemen, if you want to lunch, go out this door to your left and follow the arrows. Otherwise, go to your 200 sessions downstairs.
My son's going to Trinity in Deerfield.
Isn't it good school?
Yeah.
Good school. Yeah.